When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Football fans, do you want to hear the whole unadulterated truth about where your team stands?
It's the most embarrassing film I have ever watched in my entire life.
Former NFL lineman Mark Schlereth gives his perspective on the top storylines and games on a weekly basis on the Stinkin' Truth Podcast.
You may get out of here with two sacks and a tackle for loss, but you're getting out with a bloody nose.
New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday.
It's going to be a street fight.
Make sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
For the next few minutes, I want to talk about Friday the 13th. Joining us to help us understand why Friday the 13th is such an issue is Associate Professor of Anthropology Emeritus at University of Buffalo SUNY, Professor Phil Stevens. Hey, Prof, how you doing?
Yes, fine. Here I am. And boy, that's a sad lead-in to this discussion. Let's have some fun instead of for a few minutes. Anyway.
Yeah, we'll try to balance it out. We like to do a little bit of both. Obviously, we want to confront the major issues, but we also like to talk about things that aren't quite so serious. But for some people, Friday the 13th is very serious. Some people won't leave the house on Friday the 13th. Some people are convinced that bad things are going to happen to them or around them on Friday the 13th. And I'm not sure why. I'll be honest with you. I will fess up from the start. I am not a superstitious person, but I do sometimes observe some superstitions just because maybe it won't hurt me. You know, maybe I won't open an umbrella inside just not to tempt fate. Maybe I won't, although I did this week, walk under a ladder. That just seems like a silly thing to do in most instances, but I needed something right on the other side of it, so I just kind of walked under, grabbed it, and walked back. But I'm a little tiny bit superstitious, but not because I really fear something bad's going to happen, but just in case there's something to it, maybe not take any risk I don't have to unnecessarily. Are you at all superstitious, Professor?
Well, my argument is that we all are. So let's look at what this means. I'm retired, as you said, but I use
the fancy word emeritus to say that you're retired.
Emeritus, yes, that means retired. But I've just finished a book that was published this year by Routledge, in which I explore these issues. And the first thing we need to look at quickly is the word itself. Superstition comes from two Latin words, super, which means above, the root for superior, higher, and stitio, which is a standing point. So it implies that we know very well that there's a better explanation, and it can be a put-down. And that's kind of unfair. We want to be careful about using the term, because this is these kinds of beliefs are examples of universal patterns of human thinking. Everywhere in the world and throughout history, people believe in two things. One, things that are similar to other things, and the similarity can be in form, shape, or behavior, or color, or sound, any attribute. Things that are similar to other things have a causal relationship with those other things. Sometimes that causal relationship can be beneficial, but sometimes it can be negative. And secondly, things that have been in contact, in direct physical contact with other things, retain an element of connection after they are separated. And these two patterns of thinking are absolutely universal, and they are the basis for these superstitions.
All right, well, let's put those in words that maybe are a little more understandable for our audience. I'll go backwards. When you say the causal effect of things that come into contact with other things, we're talking about curses, we're talking about bad luck, we're talking about bad juju that things may have?
Not curses. Let's go to the origin of this particular superstition, Friday the 13th. Most scholars, most people today regard this as having originated with the traditional story of the Last Supper of Jesus, which was presumed to have been on a Thursday night. There were 13 people at that table. At that night, Jesus was betrayed by one of those 13. He was arrested, and the story is well known. He was flogged and crucified the next day, which was a Friday. And thereafter, any conjunction of those elements appearing later on could be considered bad luck, because they are similar to that terrible event.
So Friday the 13th and the number 13 were not necessarily bad luck prior to Christianity coming into being, prior to Jesus Christ.
Correct.
These were not things. They don't go back into pagan times of 13 being bad luck or Friday the 13th being bad luck.
Well, now, there are some arguments that the number 13 has a much older history and does go into earlier pre-Christian times. And there's a story about the Norse gods and so on. I'm not fully familiar with that. Those are fairly localized. The Christian story spread widely and even into non-Christian areas. The superstition spread, and it spread so widely that a lot of people don't know this origin of it. Let's look at some other illustrations, which you've already mentioned, like breaking a mirror. The mirror reflects things, and the break in the mirror could be somehow damage to those things that are reflected in it.
And then 7 years of bad luck.
And the seven is, I'm not sure where that comes from. There are different numbers in people's numerological superstitions. 3 and 7 and 40, for example, are all significant numbers. That varies tremendously. It means a substantial amount, that, as opposed to 3, which is a smaller amount. And 40, the number 40 in the Bible is appears very frequently. That's a long, 40 is a long time. Let's talk about the umbrella in the house, which you've already mentioned also. An umbrella is designed for protection from storm. We want to keep storm outside the house. The open umbrella is for that purpose only, or maybe protection against intense sunlight too. But opening it inside the house can bring those elements in. The house, universally, the residence is a place of peace, of order, of domesticity, and so on. Outside is potentially unpredictable, violent. The umbrella belongs outside. The same principles operate with the old superstition, which your grandmother might have believed in. If her husband, your grandfather or your great grandfather, left his hat on their marital bed, she might be very upset. That superstition seems to have died, because the hat is designed for protection from outside, from storm, or from something unpleasant, right? And the bed is where you not only you sleep, but you create life in the bed.
Yes, pleasant things should happen in the bed. Yes,
exactly.
You know, it's funny because to this day, it is military code that when you are wearing a hat or a cover, as it's generally referred to in the military, you remove it indoors. And it is it's frowned upon in the military. I don't know how it's punishable because I've never been in the military myself, but I know people who have been, and they tell me they will take their hat off the second they come through the threshold and go indoors. And that's still a thing, and it is bad for them to be wearing their hat inside.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. But in the military, it has a double association with weaponry, with violence. In the ancient times, a warrior absolutely must leave his weaponry and his armor outside the house. From my childhood, it was impolite for any man to wear any hat inside any building.
Wow, and definitely don't put it on the bed. Yeah, right.
Or stepping on a crack. There's another.
All right, well, I'm going to pause you right there, and we'll find out why Mama's back is going to get broken if we step on a crack with Professor Phil Stevens, emeritus, retired. Coming up after this, if you have any questions about any superstitions and why we have them, whether it's walking under a ladder, stepping on a crack, a black cat, or anything else on this Friday the 13th, call in and ask Professor Stevens or text me on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line at 504-260-1870. And honestly, are you being at all a little careful today on this Friday the 13th? Are you even a little bit superstitious? We'll talk about that coming up. And then we'll get into sports superstition, which to me is a whole nother thing here on WWL. I'm Dave Cohen, in for Newell Norman. Let's hear that Stevie Wonder. Coleman in Master Control with the theme of the movie Friday the 13th. There you go. All right. I'm Dave Cohen in for Newell Norman. We're talking with Professor Emeritus Phil Stevens about superstition. He's got a book out just this year talking about Friday the 13th and superstitions and why we behave the way we do. Professor, I think it's safe to say the vast majority of people don't know why things that they do because they're fearful, they're bad luck. They avoid them anyway, even though they don't understand it. You were about to tell us before we had to take the break about why we don't want to step on a crack and break Mama's back. It rhymes, and I think that probably has something to do with it. But where did that start? That when you're walking down the sidewalk, if you step on a crack, in between two pieces of concrete or a cracked piece of concrete, you're going to break your mother's back.
Right, and the next line says, "Step on a line, break your father's spine." I think this little ditty was created sometime in earlier centuries to remind us of these superstitions. Crack is damage, and stepping on it could infect you with the essence of damage. Now, this sounds silly, but this really is the basis for this idea. And such magical energy is contagious. Things that you associate with could become infected by the essence of damage, if you're following me.
It's actually very simple when you break it down like that. You don't want to be associated with something broken because it will then lead to you having bad gree-gree. You being infected with badness.
Especially if you have been in direct contact with it, you see. Another popular superstition has to do with black cats, which are frequently mentioned. This has to do with witchcraft beliefs. And by the way, the book I referred to has the words magic and witchcraft in the title, not superstition, in case anybody's looking for it.
What is the title, just so we're clear on that?
Rethinking the Anthropology of Magic and Witchcraft. It's a new theory of both magic and witchcraft beliefs. And the cat is associated with witches. We're talking about the ancient witch, the evil witch of classical beliefs of the Inquisition late medieval early modern Europe.
Not current Wiccan, but we're going back to cauldrons and brooms and all that.
Yes, This is a thoroughly evil person who had all kinds of supernatural abilities, including a familiar animal. The word familiar was used as a noun. The familiar was the witch's pet, usually an animal, but sometimes a spirit, which shared in the witch's power. And a cat was a common witch's pet in the medieval, late medieval Europe and in New England as well. And if black cat, blackness is the color of night, and by association, nefarious things that go
darkness
on at night.
Yeah.
So if a black cat crosses your path, as the old superstition goes, you are in line for some bad luck. It might mean that the witch is looking for you, or has already spotted you as
find you, perhaps.
The cat is an extension of the witch's power.
That's the modern-day crazy old cat lady, I think. Maybe they were just crazy old cat ladies back in the day, and they were perceived as evil. So there you go. All right. I walked under a ladder.
I never thought of that. That's an interesting. Can we talk to J.D. Vance about that interpretation? No, never mind.
let's not get political. I walked under a ladder. We were putting up some lights at my house this week. And something I needed, I think the staple gun was on the other side of the A-frame ladder, and it was a whole lot easier just to walk under the ladder, grab it, and walk back instead of walking around it. But it did occur to me at the time that I was tempting fate, that I was risking my well-being and could be struck with bad luck because I walked under a ladder, as you're instructed not to do. That just seems, from a safety standpoint, if someone's on the ladder with a hammer or other tools, you don't want to step under them because they might drop it on you. But where did that one come from?
Well, I think that's it. A lot of superstitions correspond to what anthropologists call taboo, things you avoid in order to not to establish a magical connection. And that's all of the things we've been talking about so far. But this one is a puzzle to me. There have been lots of interpretations of the symbolism of the ladder. But I think yours is the correct one. It's like why we avoid death, why we avoid corpses and so on, as a matter of safe personal safety. Walking under a ladder is not a very sensible thing to do. And some taboos, some superstitions do arise out of practical behaviors, and I think that's the best answer for this one. Whether or not there's somebody up the ladder working, he or she may have left something up there, a bucket of paint or whatever, which could fall. So I think that's the best I can do for you. If you've
gotcha.
Got other explanations, I'd love to hear them.
I'm just spitballing here, you know, off the top of my head. All right, so what are some of the other ones that you have studied that you can share with us that people may find interesting about why we have certain superstitions?
Well, there are literally thousands, and they vary with cultures. The ones I've given you, I had prepared in advance because they are widespread. They are transcultural. They're found in many, many areas of the world, based on these same principles of magical connections.
There are some good superstitions as well. Find a penny, pick it up, and all the day you'll have good luck. I guess that's just because you found something of value, huh?
Well, people can establish their own, and do. People do. A shiny stone, a clear, bright stone, or a shiny penny, or something that is associated with good luck. The first dollar we made in our lemonade stand or whatever, that particular item might be taken and held by an individual as a talisman, a symbol of personal luck.
The lucky rabbit's foot.
Yes, yes.
What's that all about? Poor rabbit.
No. There's another one. Thank you for that. Lots of interpretations of that. The rabbit is fast and so on and so on. But this one really comes down to certain behaviors of the rabbit. Wherever rabbits are in the world, they are noted for their rapid reproduction, right? They breed.
Nice way to put that, yes.
Rapidly. So rabbits become symbols of fertility. This is why at Easter time, two pagan symbols are rabbits and eggs. And you have a rabbit carrying a basket of eggs as a symbol of a pagan symbol of Easter time. Both of them are symbols of fertility. So a piece of that rabbit
seems like an odd piece, his foot, but okay.
We used to be able to buy dried rabbit's feet attached to little keychains, right?
Yes.
You won't find them anymore.
No. Animal rights groups have kind of put an end to that.
Right, exactly.
Horseshoes.
What else? A horseshoe. Now, here's another one with multiple interpretations. And again, the best one is that a horseshoe upright with the points pointing upward represents horns. It represents a horned animal like a bull, which are universally, absolutely universally symbolic of power, of potentially good power, strong power. The horseshoe.
You want a bull market? That's always a good thing, and bulls are always perceived as being strong and virile and all those things. Yeah.
That's right. And a horseshoe hung with the points upward over your doorway is a good luck sign. It brings beneficial power to the household or whatever the building is. That's a good illustration. Give me another.
Well, let's shift a little bit, Professor Phil Stevens, to sports, the sports arena, because I know a lot of athletes who are extremely superstitious. They wear the same clothes, they go through the same routine, and even fans of their teams. You know, there are people who won't change their socks if the team wins while they were wearing them, and they'll wear those same filthy, smelly, stinky socks until their team loses. We had a coach here in New Orleans of the Saints who would chew the same piece of gum as long as things were going well in a game, and if things started going badly, he changed the gum. I remember a pitcher who would never step on foul lines, had to jump over them, and had to eat licorice every inning before he went to pitch. I mean, there's all these sports superstitions.
There is a classic article written by an anthropologist who was a former minor league baseball player. It's called Baseball Magic. Tell your audience to look it up online. They will find it. It talks about baseball superstitions, and they are explainable according to the exact same principles that we've been describing. Things that are associated with a successful game will be retained and performed in other games. A bat that has hit a home run will be separated from bats that have struck out. The strikeout bat will be separated, and so that it does not contaminate other bats. George Gmelch is the author of that paper, and he talks about a player who did miserably, and he couldn't understand why he did so poorly. And then he remembered that his wife had prepared pancakes for him that morning. He never has pancakes, or rarely has pancakes for breakfast. So on subsequent game days, when he was going to play, he avoided pancakes. He established his own pancake taboo. When I was in high school, I was a swimmer. And on one day, I broke the school record in my event. And on that day, I had been wearing a certain set of clothes. And I consciously made an effort to wear the same clothes on subsequent days when I was going to compete in the pool. This is long before I became an anthropologist and studied this stuff. This was my human nature. things that are associated with good things or with negative things will retain those associations, you see. And that explains most sports superstitions and activities in which there is not only competition, but some element of risk, some element of potential danger. We could go on.
And this is universal across cultures, across time, across geographical lines, races, everything. These same kinds of beliefs, superstitions, fears, and beliefs and rewards for things, that they cross just about every boundary, huh?
That's right. And the subtitle of my book is Inherently Human. That's where my new theory of magic and witchcraft differ from all other previous theories, that we're talking about fundamental human patterns of thinking and human behavior.
Professor Phil Stevens, thank you so much for joining us. I know you got to run. We appreciate, I know this is a busy day for you since it's Friday the 13th and you being an expert and such. So thank you so much for joining us here on WWL and sharing it. And I know we can find your book everywhere they sell books, including online and in stores.
Yeah, thank you very much for inviting me to join you.
All right, have a safe and happy Friday the 13th.